episode comes out, I'll be in Texas, hopefully. Mm-hmm. So I'll be in Austin for South by Southwest, which hopefully is cool. The more that I look into it, the less it is what I thought it was going to be. It seems to me it's more of like a convention, honestly. It reminds me more of Dragon Con than of any music festival I've been to.
Okay.
Because they have like a film section. They have panels with, you know, different famous people who are famous for various reasons. And then they have a music portion of it. And I only have a badge for the music portion. But all this stuff is taking place at the, you know, various hotels and convention centers in downtown Austin. And then the music part of it is not what I thought at all. Because I was like, where's the fucking schedule? I just want a schedule with artists. And it's not like that. So basically it's labels or management groups who are showcasing five or six bands on their team. And they'll have like a venue on a certain night. And if you want to see the showcase, then you can get in and each band plays for like 30 minutes. It's just like their top five or their best songs, basically. They're presenting it. So it's not really like an actual concert, because I was trying to see where is everybody playing at.
Right.
So I can bounce around town, but it really just makes no sense to see one band for 30 minutes here and then go across town and see 30 minutes of somebody. It's like stupid. So
that's interesting.
I don't know.
I've heard of South by Southwest. I didn't have any idea it was that type of thing either.
Yeah.
But it's interesting.
I don't know. It seems weird. That's what I'm gathering about it now. We'll see how it actually is when I'm there. It kind of makes me nervous because anytime we've done Dragon Con, we've had like a big group of people. And I'm familiar with downtown Atlanta, so hopping around. Hopping around from place to place is like not a big deal.
Four or five blocks there, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm not familiar with Austin at all. And it's like, yeah, four or five, maybe a little bit larger area. And I don't know how the fuck to use public transportation. And that's pretty much going to be...
I mean, if it's all within walking distance, it'd be fine, but...
Hopefully it's cool. I don't know. All the festivities really for the music start on Wednesday. So we're doing broadcasts with both of my radio stations. Some of the bands that we're going to be talking to, I'm really excited for. There's one called Michigander, actually. Uh-huh. I was listening to today. Really good.
Are they coming to the radio station, or are you interviewing them at the thing?
We have like different venues that our stations are going to be at in hotels where we have set up shows of our own with artists that we play. So we're going to interview them. They're going to do like a couple of acoustic songs or whatever for anybody who wants to come to our little showcase. And then the other band I might have mentioned, Tiger Cub, I saw them at Louder Than Life and they were fucking sick. And they're on our interview list. I was like, hell yeah, because I ran into them after their set at Louder Than Life. And I was like, you guys were fucking awesome. Like, you should not have been playing so early in the day.
Right.
Because you guys kicked ass. And they were like, oh, well, you should interview us. And I was like, I'm fucked up right now. I can't interview you. But I was like, maybe sometime in the future. And look at that. They'll be at the stations in Texas. So I'm really
excited.
Hopefully
they remember you.
They might.
That was that fucked up chick at the...
I was wearing like all tie-dye rainbow bullshit.
Yeah.
And a hat that said magical motherfucker on it. So I feel like they might remember me. They're called Tiger Cub. If anyone wants to look them up. Or other parts. No, I think I mentioned them before because the way they started out this one song, it sounded like they just went in with a guitar solo. And I was like, whoa, what the fuck? Like, that's a pretty aggressive way to start a fucking song with a guitar solo. And it wasn't a guitar solo. It was just a really long and intricate riff that kept repeating throughout the song. And I was like, I've never heard anyone do that before. That was fucking crazy. They just kept me guessing. It was really good. So I'm excited to talk to them.
Cool.
Anyways, let's do this mini episode.
I guess we can do that.
Yeah.
Welcome to the show, everybody. This is Death by Music Podcast.
Show is.
At least it was the last time I checked. My name is Jake, also the last time I checked. And I'm here with Alex. And we're talking about something.
John Fogerty.
Is it Fogerty or Fogerty?
It's Fogerty.
Okay.
Did you always say Fogerty or you just never said it?
No, I'm just fucking around.
Speaking of names, I saw something yesterday. This woman had posted her child's like birth certificate. And she was like, because the people at the hospital fucked the name up and they wrote the baby's name was Korn with a K, like the band. She was like, they just named my baby's name is legally Korn. What the fuck? And she's like, it was supposed to be Kora, K-O-R-A.
That's a
major fuck up.
Yeah.
But I'm like, do you get like a period of time where you're like, psych, don't make that legal?
I don't know how that works. Yeah. I think once it's on that document, it's there.
You gotta keep it.
And then you gotta like go through the motions to change it.
That's a fucking wild. I'm assuming somebody wrote it by hand and then they wrote the A kind of wrong.
You know what it
was?
Somebody wrote it in cursive.
Maybe.
And the kid running the typewriter there.
Oh, yeah.
Couldn't read it.
I was going to say, an A in cursive looks nothing like an N. You would honestly make less of a mistake if it was in cursive, if you could read cursive.
Right.
Because all you have to do is not connect. Wait, that doesn't make... Yeah, if you just like not connect it at the top, I could see how it looks like an N in just regular. What is regular called?
What, writing?
Yeah, not cursive.
Yeah.
Just regular. Right. Anyways, it doesn't fucking matter. Sorry for rambling, and we know it pisses some of you guys off, so we'll get to the episode topic. That's why I'm putting all this shit on to our Patreon, which is why we'll talk about that at the end of the episode.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Right. So this is, it was recommended by Don because Blake recommended last week's episode on some sort of lawsuit. Oh, yeah, the Rick Astley Young Gravy thing.
Yeah. Yep.
And Don had commented on that and said the time John Fogerty was sued for sounding too much like himself. And I was like, what the
That's
fuck?
That's great.
Yeah. So
I'm curious. You've piqued my curiosity here.
I tickled your...
Tickled
what?
My fancy.
Tickled your fancy or other
It's floating in my
things.
Boat.
Okay. This is by Joe Daly. It's at loudersound.com. When John Fogerty, the singer, guitarist, and songwriting mastermind behind Creedence Clearwater Revival... broke up that band in 1972. He single-handedly laid waste to one of the most successful and beloved groups on planet Earth. Half a century later, it's difficult to conceive just how massive they were back then. Creedence had accumulated 10 million selling singles. 10 million? Just 10 individual singles that sold 1 million copies, I'm assuming is what they mean.
Maybe.
They dropped 6 albums on Fantasy Records that landed in the Billboard top 10, 3 in 1969 alone. Jesus Christ.
What?
That's Taylor Swift numbers.
Well, she puts out that many albums?
Yeah, I mean, she's putting out her re-releases and stuff. Well,
that's different, though.
We used to have numbers like that when we were putting out 3 episodes a fucking week or whatever.
Oh, yeah. No, fuck that.
Yeah.
I mean, we see it with these older bands where they're putting out like
Yeah.
2 albums a year minimum, back in the 60s.
It helps when your songs are only 2 minutes long.
Yeah.
Which is all Creedence Clearwater Revivals are like 2 to 3 minutes.
Yeah, they're short, but also, I mean, you got to remember back in the day, like distribution and stuff, like your mm-hmm. stuff comes out and then people are like, oh yeah, and then
need more.
You don't come out with anything and they forget about you.
Probably
you
also know? Helps that they didn't have to deal with all the fucking producing stuff. Because if anything, Creedence Clearwater's music does not sound overproduced at all. It sounds like they've recorded everything live. I don't know if that's... So that would definitely make it quicker, you know?
Possibly. I mean,
pump that shit out.
I haven't analyzed their recordings just to see how good they are, but I've heard plenty of Creedence Clearwater, and they don't sound... The recordings don't sound bad.
No, they sound good. What I'm saying is it sounds like they recorded the whole band live once, because then that would be way quicker than the way, you know, like Joy Division records,
right.
Which that episode
individual
is
drum
out.
Beats.
Yeah, our Ian Curtis episode is out now, so fucking go listen to that shit if you haven't. Anyways, we're not even one paragraph in. I'm so sorry. They topped charts all over the globe, although, weirdly, they never had a number one hit in their native country, which was America. Nonetheless, their instant recognizable sound proved hugely popular with mainstream audiences. While some of their contemporaries looked forward to the consciousness-elevating possibilities of psychedelia, Creedence celebrated America's verdant lineage of R&B, fusing it with the jammy excess of roots rock and the fuzzy power of electric blues. Even if you hadn't heard the song before, you knew when you were listening to Creedence. So true. Very distinctive.
Yeah.
Creedence dropped Cosmos Factory in 1970. It was their 5th LP and arguably their best, although its 2 predecessors, Green River and Willie and the Poor Boys, the ones from 1969, were formidable outings in their own right. When people use swampy to describe Creedence's trademark sound, Run Through the Jungle springs to mind. Cosmos' 6th track is a watery, freewheeling jam with a thudding low end and stitches of taut, bluesy fretwork drenched in reverb. They released it as a single, which proved a canny choice. It received a gold certification and quickly emerged as a fan favorite. After breaking up the band in 1972, Fogerty focused on a solo career, releasing three strong albums very much in the spirit of the Creedence sound. The first, The Blue Ridge Rangers, was an album of covers with no mention of Fogerty's name on the cover. It came out on Fantasy, but after alleging that the label had failed to promote the record properly, Fogerty demanded to be released from his contract. Fantasy Records owner Saul Zaintz refused. Eventually, Fogerty signed a deal with David Geffen's Asylum Records for the North American rights to his next album, but it cost him. Fogerty had to forfeit the rights to all of the songs he'd written under his previous agreements. Fuck. This did not sit well at all with Fogerty, and the idea of payback landed high on his agenda. After releasing a critically adored but commercially muted eponymous solo album in 1975, the one with the original version of Rockin' All Over the World, Fogerty wrote the album Hoodoo, which Asylum rated as subpar, prompting Fogerty to call off its release just 1 week before it was scheduled to drop. He laid low for the next decade until 1985's Centerfield, which eclipsed them all in terms of commercial sales and cultural saturation. That song fucking, I can't stand it. That Put Me in Coach song? Put me in coach. You know it.
Maybe. Let me look it up real quick.
They play it at every baseball game, probably. Or like any fucking game where there's balls. Centerfield contains not one but two tracks that seem very much directed towards his former label boss, Mr. Greed, and the less ambiguous Zans Can't Dance, which includes the lyric, Zans can't dance, but he'll steal your money. Watch out, boy, he'll rob you blind. Fogerty flew a bit too close to the sun on the latter, drawing a $144 million defamation suit from Zans that was eventually settled out of court. Subsequent pressing saw the song retitled Vans Can't Dance. But it was Centerfield's opening track, The Old Man Down the Road, that would ignite one of the strangest plagiarism lawsuits in music history. Remember that Fantasy owned the rights to Cosmos Factory and its aforementioned sixth track, Run Through the Jungle. It was their contention that The Old Man, which they did not own, was abject plagiarism of Run Through the Jungle. Essentially, they claimed that Fogerty had ripped himself off and they sued him for plagiarizing himself. Fogerty virulently disagreed, insisting that The Old Man was a separate and unique composition and that any similarities were coincidental. The case did not settle out of court. It moved relentlessly through the judicial system all the way to a jury trial in 1988. In one of rock's most bizarre moments of the 80s, Fogerty sat in the witness box with a guitar on his lap and explained to the jurors what must have seemed obvious to the entire courtroom. Of course, the two songs are going to sound the same, considering that they were written and performed by the same artist in that artist's signature swampy style.
Mm-hmm.
But they could still be wholly different songs. The jury agreed with Fogerty, determining... Well, which Fogerty? The winning one or the losing one? The jury agreed with him, determining that the two tracks fell short of the legal standard for copyright infringement. If Fogerty felt vindicated, his joy was violently diminished by the $1 million in legal fees that he spent to defend himself against the infringement claim. Had Fantasy Records won their lawsuit, Fogerty would have been required to pay their legal fees, and so he reasoned that the opposite should also apply. He petitioned the court for reimbursement of his legal fees, but was denied. What the fuck? With that court ruling that Fantasy's suit had been neither frivolous nor in bad faith, the burden required for reimbursement of legal fees. Undaunted, Fogerty appealed that ruling in 1993, and his appeal was denied by the U.S. Court of Appeals in the Ninth Circuit. The crux of Fogerty's appeal was that it was unfair for successful defendants to face a higher burden than successful plaintiffs for reimbursement of attorneys' fees. Refusing to concede, Fogerty appealed to the United States Supreme Court, who agreed to hear the case and who, in a unanimous 1994 decision, ruled in his favor. Good. That's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Chief Justice William H. Rehnquist, a staunch conservative, perhaps betrayed an appreciation for Fogerty's music, noting in his decision that Creedence has been recognized as one of the greatest American rock and roll groups of all time. He also noted that Congress intended a single standard should apply to prevailing parties in the award of attorney's fees. Fogerty has continued to release music over the years, and while themes and collaborators have changed, the new songs continue to sound like the John Fogerty of old. Yeah, that's crazy, because he didn't even want to go to court. They basically made him, like, they dragged him in there for some stupid ass case, and then were like, well, that sucks, you win, but you still have to pay all this money for your fees. He didn't even want to go.
He shouldn't have had to go. Like, it was his own. How could, you know what I'm thinking of right now is when Taylor Swift had to redo all her stuff.
Yeah,
so she didn't.
She's still in the middle of doing that.
So she hasn't had this particular issue. She's re-recording her original mm-hmm. music,
so
which I guess
owns...
she's legally able to do, even though somebody...
Yep.
They only own the recordings. They don't own the rights to the songs, I'm assuming.
Yeah, so, I mean, she's listed as a songwriter. It's her song, so she can re-record the song
okay.
if she wants.
That's
she...
probably where that loophole is, but they were
yeah.
suing him for sounding too much like himself.
Right.
When these two songs are obviously written by the same person.
Yeah,
and owned
and
by
some
different
bands,
people.
I mean, especially back then, a lot of groups had a lot of songs that sounded exactly the fucking same, like Roll Over Beethoven. There were so many songs that sounded just like that. They start off the same way. It's got the same progression.
Well, I mean,
same
that's,
chords. Four chords of
was,
awesome
that
type
was Chuck
shit.
Berry, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's his style of rock and roll. That's
right.
What he does.
So
that
all
you,
of
that
his
you
songs,
expect to hear that from Chuck Berry.
Yeah. All of his songs sound the fucking same.
Yeah.
But he wrote them. I'm assuming he wrote them. I don't fucking know. But there's so many cases of that back then as well, so it's just
I think those guys were sour that he fucking ditched them and went and made money doing
yeah
shit with other people.
Yeah, of course, and because it was successful too, makes
yeah.
sense why they were mad. But the fucking audacity, it just I
can't imagine paying in early 90s $1 million for
as a musician
for,
too, that's fucking
for legal
crazy.
Fees
it's wild to me how much these companies just rip off these artists. Like,
mm-hmm.
you wouldn't have shit if he didn't record those couple of albums with you anyways. So that really sucks to be an artist and to be a musician and constantly have people, like, coming after you for shit like that.
You know, people are greedy.
Yeah, it's insane. Like, a bunch of people who don't play music, who don't have anything to do with that record-making process, but they're stealing your money anyways.
Yeah.
Fuckers. So yeah, good. I'm glad that he ultimately won it, but it's crazy it had to go all the way up to the fucking Supreme Court to get to that point. Well, that was a good one, Don. Thank you for your suggestion.
Yeah.
If you guys have any other stories like this, let us know in our Facebook group, because that's where we pulled those two from. And yeah, you guys, I mentioned it at the top of the last mini episode. You'll start to see our mini episodes migrating over to Patreon. We'll still release them weekly on the main feed, but it's basically because, like, occasionally... Oh, my cat is licking the inside of his asshole right now.
He's very intense. Like, he's going hard over there.
I made him wear the little suit last night, and he was pretty upset about that. Stop it! Get your face out of your asshole. Stinky, huh? Wow, I lost my train of thought. Oh, yeah, so anyways, we have, like, 150... mini episodes on our main feed.
Uh-huh.
And it just takes up so much space, and we have so many topics. I feel like people will stumble onto our podcast because they're trying to hear about any number of these topics, but then they click on the episode and it's only like 15 minutes long and they're like, what the fuck?
Right.
It's a mini episode. We've said it before, but I think they're getting confused, and then because they don't like the format of a mini episode, then they stop listening. And it's like, well, I wish you would discover us based on the actual work that we're doing, that we put a lot
yeah.
of time and pride into, instead of judging us for like a mini episode where we've said from the beginning, we're just reading, you know, some stories that you guys suggest.
Yeah, these are just placeholders and fun, quick, easy things for us to do.
Yeah.
To give you guys something to listen to, you know.
Yeah. So,
and we all learn something in the process,
yeah.
which is fun.
Yeah. Well, I understand, like, some people are like, why don't they know anything about the topic? And it's like, because that's, well, it's a mini episode and you guys suggested it, so we're all reading about it together. But
yeah,
we do know a lot about a lot of other stuff that we spend lots of time researching. So I'm like, fuck it. You know what? We'll give the mini episodes out, you know, during the season. But I think about every 6 months or so, I'm just going to go through and dump all the old ones up on the Patreon. So I mean, honestly, the Patreon people are getting even more shit because you guys are going to have exclusive access to all of our old mini episodes.
Yeah.
In addition to the like 60 Patreon episodes that we've got up there.
God, is it that much?
It's a lot. Yeah, we've been doing this for a fucking minute. So if you want to be a part of the Patreon, it's patreon.com/deathbypodcastteam. There should be a link in the description as well. So, and thank you guys, the ones of you that stick around and love us. Yeah, great. We appreciate that. We have got some, like, true fans out there, which is nice, and we love interacting with you guys. So, again, join the Facebook group, and fucking how about you rest in peace as well.
Later.
Death by Music podcast is written and produced by Alex Motler, Cassie Gardner, and Jake.